Heather Stocking talking to Jerry Durko.
I'm going to talk about my grandmother that had come over from the Ukraine. I could recall the stories that she had told us on the hard trip coming over. She had left Ukraine with, she had three daughters, but two of them were born here. She had three daughters and one son. My mother, which was born in Ukraine, come with my grandmother and her husband. And they come out from Ukraine to Halifax in Nova Scotia. And the reason they did that is because there was big ads in Ukraine and in Poland to get land in Canada, which was just about free land. So and things were rough in Poland and Ukraine at that time, and still is. Mm-hmm. And it was, at that time, it was still a communist country too. So anyhow, she had come over, got to Halifax. From Halifax, she said they went on a train to Winnipeg. And then when they got to Winnipeg, she said there was also a thing that said to come into northern Alberta because the land there was next to nothing. It was, I think it was, if I could recall, 5 acres of land, but you had to clear 2 acres and then you could get the 5 acres plus the next year, if you cleared it up, you'd get the full quarter. So she said they got to Athabasca from Winnipeg to Athabasca on a train. When they got off the train, she said it was late in the fall, and they handed her and her husband, which is my grandfather, there was 5 items. There was a saw, an axe, a hoe, a rake, and I can't recall what the 5th item was. She said there was 5 items, anyhow, that they gave, put them in the wagon, and drove out into the country, which was in the Paxson area, that we call now the Paxson area. And she said they dropped them off in the bush. And she said we had to build a house because we had no house. Mm-hmm. We had no nothing. She said that so they walked to their neighbors, wherever they dropped them. There was some people that lived there that had built a little shack, and they kept them there for the winter, and they helped them clear a little bit of brush and then start doing logs so they could build their house for the next summer. Mm-hmm. So she said they did build a little bit of a house, but it was really rough going because, like I said, they only had those 5 items. Mm-hmm. So the guy come to do an inspection and to check how much they had cleared, and they had only cleared a little bit because they were trying to build their house at the same time. Mm-hmm. But he gave them signed it and said, hey, you're trying, you're doing the best you can. So he signed the thing off and told them they had the full quarter of land, which was nice. Marked off on mm-hmm. the thing. So, but she said it was between them and the neighbor that they finally got their little house built for the next winter. Mm-hmm. And then eventually from there, they stayed there for a few years and then moved to Donatville, and that's at the junction of Highway 63 and 855 is where they had moved to, and they're still there, the original place, not the original house, but the place is still there where they lived. And
how old would your mom have been on this?
My mom was by that time, my mom, by time everything had got finished, my mom was, when she first come here, I think she was 12 or 13. Mm. And then, anyhow, They were probably out there for about 5 years or 6 years, because that's how my dad met my mom. My dad lived in Vimy, and his parents farmed in Vimy. And my uncle, Nick Semenchuk, lived in Grassland. And my dad wanted to come to work for him because it was hard to find work. And Uncle Nick had a store, and he had a truck that would do odd work for different people, I guess.
That Nick would have been your grandma's?
That was my dad. My dad that had come.
Okay.
My dad's name was Mike Durko. They were, and they lived in Vimy. And they lived along the highway, and they got to be known later on in life. They got to be known, and that's where it was quite a stop for people that were going to Edmonton. Mm. Because there was no road between Boyle and Grassland. Mm. It was all muskeg. They had to go through the Paxton area to Collington and then get on number 2 highway to go to Edmonton at that time. So anyhow, Dad had only had a bicycle. He didn't have a vehicle. So he rode his bicycle from Vimy, and then he happened to stop at where my mom was living, which was Postlux at that time, and for a drink of water, because he still had another 10 miles to go to Grassland. Well, he didn't really know how far he had to go. But anyhow, Dad always laughed about it. He said that he could see this pretty lady mm-hmm. that was there. So he thought, well, I'd like to get to know her, I guess. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, he said he had his drink of water and then pedaled on to Grassland. And then a couple of days later, he thought, well, maybe I'll pedal back to Donatville, mm-hmm. where they were, and see if I can see her again. Eh? Mm-hmm. And that's how they met. So it mm-hmm. was, and then that was in 1940, because in 41, I was born in 41, my dad went to the army, maybe in 1939. And then my dad got called to go to the army, him and his brother. And when my dad was in the army, he wasn't there too long, and they were in this brigade or whatever it was, rolled, and he broke his back.
Oh.
Well, he was in the army. So he couldn't go on in the front lines or anything, but my uncle Joe did go out to do the front lines and the thing. So they put my dad in the kitchen or the soup area mm. where he had to peel potatoes and just light duty mm. and stayed there, and you have to put your time in the army. And then he saved a little bit of money by the thing, and my mom did odd work in, there was nothing in Grassland really, just the store and maybe two stores. But anyhow, you put your name to get a truck. Dad wanted always a truck. Mm-hmm. And you had to put your name down because it was hard getting vehicles at that time. And seeing that he was in the army, they had given him one of the first choices of getting one. So when he did get home after 2 years serving in the army, there was this brand new Ford truck sitting in the yard that... So then he started trucking. He didn't really, he was hauling pigs and different things from Grassland to Edmonton, which, like I said, had to go through Paxton.
Would hire him to take their...
Yeah, haul the livestock.
Okay.
And he'd go from farmer to farmer and pick up a cow here and a pig here and cream. Cream was one of the big things in cream cans mm-hmm. You'd take to Edmonton. And then he started selling gas out of a barrels where you had a hand pump and then you filled their little containers or whatever. And So that's how he got started in the fuel business. And I remember myself turning the crank and filling out guys coming with little cans or jug and filling that up. And at that time, a barrel of gas and was $7 and some cents for 45 gallons, 205 liters. And it was just over seven. And Dad had to haul that gas from Calgary in drums. And he could put 13 drums on the back of the truck because it was only a one-ton or ton-and-a-half truck. Eh?
Right.
But obviously it paid to haul it from Calgary to Calgary. But I remember him saying, and that's when they, it was probably in about 1944, 45, when they kind of made a road between Donatville and Boyle that would hook up to Grassland, and it was in across the Muskeg there. And they put corduroy, which was like blocks of, or logs of wood, okay, on the road. And he said you'd drive through and then you'd break through. He said you'd have to unload half the drums or all the drums off the truck,
mm-hmm,
and then get yourself out and then load them back up again. And I recall him saying that it would be 3 to 4 days to go to Edmonton or to Calgary and back on that trip for this gas.
So did he actually open like a gas station eventually?
He put up pumps,
okay,
a pump in Grassland. And in Grassland, at that time, we had, there was no power. There wasn't even a telephone. The telephone come in later. We had Dale Malott had a power plant that he had in Grassland, and there was it was a big diesel engine, and they put up power poles and hooked the houses up that were. But when Dale, at 10 o'clock in the night, he shut the power plant off because he was ready for him to go to bed, so he wouldn't run it all night. The only thing is, I recall on either a Friday night or a Saturday night when Dale and Yvonne decided to have a little party, well, the power would stay on till 2 or 3 in the morning till he decided to go to bed. But we relied, and same thing on Sunday, the power wouldn't come on till late Sunday afternoon or Sunday morning at noon or afternoon. He went to church first. But
so you lived by his schedule.
We lived totally the power.
Right, yeah.
It was totally by his schedule. But we didn't have anything to, we needed power anyhow besides a light.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have no fridge. Our fridge was in a well and then in a pail. And then you put your stuff in a pail and put it down in a well to keep it cool. But, and then...
When were you born?
I was born in 1941. One boy, and I had three sisters, and then a brother, which was on and later, on at night. And we had a phone finally come in, and our phone number was number 7. And it went, I think it was 4 shorts and 3 longs, or something like that, when you'd think. But everybody could hear it ring, so it was just like a party line, eh? Between how many houses there were. We were number 7, so there was probably, I think it only went to number 9 or 12, so that's how many phones were in Grassland at that time. And we had a skating rink was built in Grassland, and I remember Dale Malott got a tank, found a tank, or maybe got a tank from somebody, like a 500-gallon tank or a 300-gallon tank, and put it on a sleigh, and then put a barrel inside of that tank, and then so he could burn wood in it,
mm-hmm,
and then there was a little slough out of Grassland, about half a mile, quarter mile out of Grassland, and you'd go in and take water out of that slough and put it into the tank, and then heat it to put on the skating rink, to put on the thing to make the water to be warm, okay. or a little bit warm anyhow. And then we had, there was a couple of about three teacherages in Grassland, because at one time, Grassland drew kids from all over the place, like just about from Wandering River, because there was no schools any. But there was a bunch of little schools, but they had been closing them down.
Mm-hmm.
So even the Amber Valley kids come to the Grassland School. So at one time we had over 400 kids in the Grassland School, Lee. Mm-hmm. And so they built about three or four teachages. And my dad by that time was in the fuel business, and we'd fill up a barrel, and I'd take it on a sleigh, but the smaller barrels, a 25-gallon barrel, take it on the sleigh and then push the barrel up to behind the teacherage and then hand pump the 25 gallons into another barrel that fed their teacherages for heat,
right.
like fuel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then pack water, that was one of my jobs too. And, the teachers would hire me to haul water to their house. And later, I think I was 18. I started driving truck when I was 17 years old, hauling freight from Edmonton, and also doing what my dad did, is pick up cattle and pigs and cream from farmers around the area.
Mm-hmm.
But not from my dad, from another guy, Walter Corse, that bought the truck from my dad, and I went to work for him.
Okay.
And then...
how do you spell his last name?
Corse, C-O-R-S-E.
Okay.
And Walter had a couple of trucks. And then I went, when I turned 18, Dad bought a Rio truck, six-cylinder Rio, gas job. And we had a 3,200-gallon tank, and I started hauling fuel to Yellowknife. I don't know how Dad ever got this haul to go to Yellowknife for Rempel Trail. But 3,200 gallons to haul to. We did a lot to Hay River, which would be put onto the barge. The fuel would load on the barge, and then we'd come back into Edmonton. But I remember going to Yellowknife, and Dad paid me, Yellowknife and back was 2,000 miles, 1,000 miles each way. And it would take 7 to 8 days, and I'd sleep in the truck, which had no sleeper, nothing, just a small cab. In fact, you could sit in the driver's seat and turn the passenger window down. That's how narrow the cab was.
Wow.
And you'd sleep in there for your 7, 8 days to make
a
round
trip. Was it a bench seat at least? So you could.
Yes, it was. The other part was bench, and then this was a bench seat, so you could lay down. But your knees were
still,
always
yeah.
cramped. And Dad paid me 5 cents a mile, which was $100 a trip.
Mm.
And like I said, it took 7 to 8 days to make this trip. But you know, that $100, I still was able to put some money away, because I did buy a car in 1955, a Chev car. But I could recall going to stopping like in Valley View or at the truck stops, having a bowl of soup. Business was my favorite. Tomato soup, and have a tomato sandwich, and a bottle of Orange Crush Pop, and it would be 90 cents.
Wow.
For all the three items.
Right.
And I'd usually give $1, and then you'd let the waitress keep the 10 cents.
Right.
And so they'd kind of get to know you.
Mm-hmm.
If, like, I pretend I was a big spender, I guess, you know,
right.
to give the 10 cents to me. But so we never made no money, but it didn't cost us money to live. You know, I could recall buying 10 cans of sardines for $1,
mm-hmm.
and a loaf of bread, and then, you know, eating, open a can of sardines and eating sardines for maybe half the trip or whatever, you know.
Right.
It, like I said, it according to the money, it was reasonable. It was, mm-hmm. You know. I did that for a while, and it was, like I said, you'd work 16, 18, or 20 hours a day. But in the summertime, it was good because up north in Yellowknife, it was daylight till, well, it was daylight just about 24 yeah. hours. So you're always going towards the sun, and it was bright, so you could go 18 hours a day and think nothing of it. But at that time, there was no rules or regulations right. or anything over that thing. That was in 1959 when Dad bought that Rio. In 1960, I bought the truck from my dad because I was going to be on my own, my big trucker thinking that. So in 1960, I bought the truck from Dad, and I stayed hauling for rentals and just hauled fuel. I think I got married in 1963, and because before that, I was living in Edmonton, back fork from Grassland to Edmonton. But then in 63, when I got married, I moved back to Grassland, and been in Grassland. Well, I've been in Grassland all my life, I guess I can say, just yeah. for those few years.
Was your wife from Edmonton then?
My wife was from Boyle. And Boyle, when we went to school, Boyle was our rivalry at school and sports and all that things. We always tried to beat Boyle. And she was quite the sports girl. So we always had a little rivalry deals.
So you knew her before then?
Knew her, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Quite a bit.
Had you dated before, or was that something that came?
Probably for a year, and then she moved to Edmonton, and then I did keep dating her when she moved to Edmonton. She went to work for the government in Edmonton, and then we got married, and then she moved back, and then we had the two boys, and I built a service station in 1967. So we had only been married probably for about 4 years, and then we built a Husky car truck stop. It was on the McMurray Highway, and in 1967 is when the highway opened up that winter. When we built it that summer, the Husky truck stop, which was a restaurant and a garage. And my wife run the restaurant, which she didn't like. and then that winter, the McMurray Highway opened up. And then Mick Fedorchuk built the one in Wandering River, the Esso, which Nick Fedorchuk used to work for my dad prior to that. And then he moved to Wandering River and built a service station there. But that was in the winter. So actually, my dad and myself had the first really, what you could say was a truck stop on the McMurray Highway. And that was in 1967.
You had to have been busy.
We were so busy when it opened up. It was unreal. I remember when the guys coming from McMurray, when they get off work on, some would get off Thursday, but mostly Friday. And when they could line up, guaranteed they were lined up for a half a mile or not better to get gas.
Wow.
And if you come from Edmonton, you couldn't get into the gas pumps. This way you'd have to go all the way to the end and get in line to get gas, to come wow. in to get gas. And it seemed like 80% of the guys that were on there were drinking. There was more booze and fixing gas tanks because it was all gravel road.
Mm-hmm.
And we could patch a gas tank with seal oil and paper towel. But the brown paper towel, because it had a little bit of fiber
right.
in it. We'd had a hoist in our garage and mm-hmm. we'd put it on. And you'd put that on the thing, and some of them, there'd be just gas would be pouring out.
Wow.
But you could smell gas through the restaurant and everything because it was all hooked together.
Mm-hmm.
And then in about 69, 69 or something, we rented the restaurant out to Joe and Ann Samaskiewicz, and they run it probably for 20 years the total. So, but we kept a car truck stop right, I forget what year we sold it, probably in about 2010. So we probably had it for about 35, 40 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I lived in a trailer. We had a mobile home. We pulled in behind the service station and lived in it. And it was just too hectic because guys would be getting you up in the middle of the night for gas and then fix tires. And, and there was no water in Grassland to speak of at all. And seeing that Ellen, my wife, was originally from Boyle, and she was from the Yugoslavian descent, which believed that the youngest in the family should be looking after their parents. So we moved to Boyle, built a house in Boyle in 1974. And then her mom and dad moved to Boyle, just down the street from us. So she could kind of, because she was...
So she was the youngest in her family?
She was the youngest in the family.
Okay.
And she got bone cancer. And she died... she was a very young lady. She was just in her 50, young 50, just 50, and she passed away.
Wow.
But she suffered. She couldn't do anything for quite a few years. Her mom and dad lived just down the street from us. And they had a real rough time because she was the baby of the family. And the Radmanovich family, she was Radmanovich, were very successful farmers there. Some of her uncles, her brother was in business in town, owned Central Sales, and different businesses, built a hotel in Boyle. Were a very successful family, but it was a hard, hard time when things, but... the boys already, Darren, the oldest, was already went to university. Colin just started university. So he did start teaching, by golly. He did have his teaching degree. But
Colin did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just started teaching, and then she passed away. So then he said he was going to come and stay and work with me and help me out for a year or two, and he's still there.
Right.
know?
Yeah.
He never, and Darren, my oldest son, went to be a policeman, because he always wanted to be a policeman. When he was cops and robbers, when the kids would play, he was always the policeman of the cops and robbers. Eh? He's worked his way up. He's a deputy chief now. So he's
with the Edmonton Police Force.
With the Edmonton
Service,
City
right?
Police Force. Yeah. But, no, the boys were good, but it was rough being, you know, just a single parent. And but the boys, I have to admit that they were excellent boys, you know, never did really get into trouble or anything. And myself, it was, I was a little leery at first. I thought I was going to be a fifth wheel, but I've had so many friends growing up there, knew everybody in the area, that I fitted right in with everybody. So there was no reason for me to remarry or anything like that because I had all the friends I wanted. And so I stayed single till today. and now it's too old to get married now.
Right. Yeah.
So, but... you know, I didn't do anything.
Really?
Business was my number one thing. I wanted to be successful in business. I was always, always scared of going broke because, you know, at I remember I expanded up quite a bit. I at one time, I probably run 20, 25 trucks. And then the interest rate went to 20%. And just before that, I had sold a bunch of different trailers because I was working for Shell Oil out of Edmonton, and I was always with Husky here. And I just thought, you know what, I got to make up my mind. Am I going to be out of Edmonton or am I going to be in Grassland? And which I was fortunate to get rid of a bunch of my stuff at the 20% and 22%. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I guaranteed would have went broke.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like everybody else. Or not everybody, but a lot of people did.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the interest rates were very high, 18, 20%. And then when we were here, I always had trucks. And then plus the service station, plus the bulk end of it. And then I took my trucks up north, or a few of them, like to Norman Wells,
mm-hmm.
to haul on the ice roads and haul out of that refinery and just stay there with the boys for the winter. I was fortunate. I had one of my cousins, first cousin, come in as a partner with me, him and his wife. So between him and my wife, they run the business while I took the trucks and went north, and then we hauled to these little Indian villages up there for, you know, 2 months of the winter, because the roads, there were just winter roads in there. But I was fortunate enough that I met a guy up there in Norman Wells that owned a construction company, and he would be looking after the north warning systems, or he was a contractor for the government that did a lot of work with the NORAD, but the north warning system. So he phoned me, and one summer, after I'd been there in the winter for a few winters, he phoned me and he says, asked me what I was doing, and I said, I never did let him know that I had a service station or anything like that. I kind of kept that quiet all the time. I said, I'm starving to death. Why? And he said, good for you, you son of a bee. He said, I got a job for you. He said, how'd you like to come and look after some men for me? He says, you'll have your own plane. I'll have a pilot. He said, you get a DC-3 plane. He said, and then he said, you can meet this pilot in Yellowknife and then start in Tuktoyaktuk. And go right across the whole north from north warning system to north warning systems. And these domes, radar domes that they had, we had to build a platform for them, the bottom part of it. I didn't have to put the dome up, but I had to straighten out. Some of the platforms were built, but we had to build a lot of platforms. So that's what I did. I did talk to my partner and my wife again, and they said, yeah, you got a chance, go mm-hmm. up there. So I flew to Yellowknife. I meet this guy, Rocky was his name, this pilot. We had an old DC-3 plane, them silver ones, them mm-hmm. old Army silver planes. It was a 1952 plane. It was an old, old plane. And anyhow, we left Yellowknife and went straight to Tuktoyaktuk. And then from Tuktoyaktuk, we went to Cambridge Bay, Hall Beach, all them northern points where the NORAD system was, right to, at that time it was called Frobisher Bay, Iqaluk, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So I did get to do the whole north end of it, which was very, very interesting. I could recall on one of our trips, we were in Shepherd's Bay, and we had to go to Hall Beach. That's where the big planes that could come out of Edmonton. There was a big airport there. Not a big, but it was a bigger airport. And I had ordered paint and railway ties to put underneath the steps to kind of level the things off. So we had some railway ties, paint and shovels and different things, because I had about 8 or 10 guys working for me. So it's daylight 24 hours a day, and the sun's kind of always up there. Mm-hmm. And old Rocky said he'd like to fly at night because it would cool off. And we flew from Shepherd's Bay to Hall Beach, loaded all this stuff up at about 3 in the morning. And every time we'd stop at different places, old Rocky would get out, and he'd had a 5-gallon pail of oil. And he'd always have to add oil to one on one side of that engine there, you know. I didn't think anything of it. So anyhow, at Hall Beach, he helped us load. There was another guy, Rod, Rocky, and myself. And so on the way back, we had all these railway ties in the back of the plane and everything. And I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and I had the headphones on, but this time I kind of fell asleep because it was 5 in the morning or whatever, 4 and 5. And all of a sudden, the plane starts going, shaking the beat heck, eh? And I wake up and I look, and it quit shaking, but my propeller's sitting like this, straight up and down, on my side. And I got all excited, and I started going, Rocky, you know, look at it. He said, I know. He said, put your headset on, eh? Mm-hmm. So I put my headset on, and he's telling me, he said, I shut the engine off because I can't hold it with one engine. Mm-hmm. We're starting to lose altitude. But he said, can you look and see if there should be an abandoned radar site around here? Because you had nothing. You had no maps or anything.
Right, he just
knew the north. So all he ever flew was in the north, eh? So Rod, in the meantime, gets up too because everything is shaking, eh? And Rocky says, you open the door and throw some of that stuff out, eh? So I said, Rod, you got to open that door. And he says, I'm not opening that door. Well, him and I get arguing back and forth. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, Rocky is hollering at us, open that door because we're going down, mm-hmm. eh? And I said, Rod, I'll never forget that. Rod, you're a single man. I got 2 kids at home, for Christ's sake. I'll hang on to your boots, I said. You know, just go and open that door. You know? So anyhow, he did. He crawled over on the ties that were in there. And he opened the door, you know, and it was just like opening that door. The wind just went right by. I thought it would be like a jet.
Suck you out. Yeah.
But it didn't. It was just so we started throwing stuff out, eh? And I can recall Rocky saying, well, that's enough, I can control it. I said, F him, boy. I said, we threw everything out. Everything. I said, shovels, the bait. I'm not taking the chance. So anyhow, he did find an old abandoned site. And he put it down. Then what had happened, the plug would foul up. It was a rotary engine. And the plugs would foul up because it used oil. And that's why he kept adding oil all the time and the thing. And then he changed the plugs. Every time he'd do that, he'd change the plugs. And he put it like in a coffee can with some cleaner in it. And then the next time he'd take his wire brush out and then use the plugs that were in there and then replace the plug thing. But he didn't do it at Hall Beach thinking that we were going to make it back. But it. So he did that away we went, but
so that stuff is still sitting out there somewhere.
If you ever hear of a rail going across the Arctic, that's our ties. it's between Hall Beach and Shepherd's Bay someplace in there.
Wow.
yeah, that was quite the experience. But Rocky was he never flew back like to Edmonton or anything like that.
Just up north.
Just north. Yellowknife and north. That was all his thing. But he knew it. And he was 70. He was 75 or 76 years old. He didn't have a license anymore. But, yeah, because I remember when we went, Hudley, the guy that went to work for, said he doesn't have his pilot license, but he said it doesn't matter. He said he's a hell of a good pilot. He says, well, okay. Doesn't matter to me if you got a license or not.
Yeah.
And he was a very, very good pilot. Eh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can recall asking him if he had ever had any, you know, bad incidents. And he said, yes, he put her down a few times, but nothing that he couldn't walk away from. Mm-hmm. But he said, I always had control of it. The North is, have you ever been in the North?
I haven't.
It's such an interesting place. You know, I was always thought I wouldn't mind living up there, but I'm glad I'm not because of the cold. Eh? Mm-hmm. I could recall, do you remember that guy that ate the nurse, Hartwell?
Oh, yeah.
Harvey Hartwell. Right. Hartwell?
Yes.
Anyhow, he's from Fort Norman, just out of Norman Wells.
Okay.
I was in Norman Wells hauling fuel out of there, and Lee at the... at the Esso Bulk plant where we were loading our fuel or out of the refinery, asked me one day, when I come in there, he says, "Have you ever met Harvey Eatwell?" And I said, "No." So I shook hands and was, "Okay, I know Harvey Eatwell." We got caught maybe a couple weeks later. Well, actually, I saw him one other day in the restaurant, at the hotel restaurant in Norman Wells. And the restaurant was just about full, and he was sitting all by himself. Well, I had met the man, so I thought, well, I kind of know him. So I went over, and I said, "Do you mind if I sit here, Harvey?" He said, "No, sit down, you know." Mm-hmm. We talked about everything, you know. So maybe a week later, we got stuck in a real bad snowstorm in Fort Norman. And we had to stay over because they blocked the road right off. You couldn't go anyplace. So I said, "Well, I know Harvey Eatwell here, you know, in Norman Wells or in Fort Norman." I said, and he told me if I'm ever there to come and stay at his place. Well, then the guy at the motels, because it was only a 3 or 4 room motel, he started to laugh. He said, "Well, that's the guy that ate the nurse." He said, "I said, well, you know, because he was stuck in the Arctic for how many 6 weeks or something, eh?" And I said, "Well, I'm not going to stay at his place." So, anyhow, when we were there, he had because he flew a plane, and he'd go out to a lot of these little Indian places and pick up people and bring them. Like at Fort Norman had a hospital that was run by the nuns.
Okay,
you know. So he'd bring pregnant women in or whatever, mm-hmm. they were sick, hey? And he put the plane down right there, because I remember when we were there, they said that he's crashed the plane again, hey? But they found him right away, and it was not too far out of the thing. Mm. But he was a big man, very nice man, very soft-spoken man, but big
wow.
man. So it was one of my experiences being up in the north. The north is definitely something.
So when did you stop, like, driving truck and that?
Well, you know what? I still have my number one license. Even though I'm 80 years old, I still have my number one license.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yeah, I don't have any trucks left or anything like that because I've been retired. But I think it was when I had my heart attack 6 years ago. That's when I kind of had to quit. I had two heart attacks one after another, pretty well. And then my brother passed away, and he was my youngest. Well, he was the youngest one. He was only also 50 some years old, and he was my partner. So then I decided to sell. I expanded the business at one time. I said to my brother, "You stay here in Grassland," and then I started another one in Red Deer, a fuel business.
Okay.
L&R Distributors, and got it going. It was a good business. And then when my brother started getting sick, well, then I said, "Well, I'm going to go back to Grassland and I'll stay in Red Deer." Mm-hmm. So I sold that business and then moved back here. And then he had brain cancer. So he didn't last very long after. Well, he was probably a year or two, but he couldn't do anything. He,
right.
You know, so. Mm-hmm. So then, after that, I had my heart attack just right after that. And I said, "You know what? This is just not worth it."
Mm-hmm.
So I sold it, all the business to. And then when Alpac first moved into the area, you know, there was a lot of people that were against it. I was one of them that was maybe outspoken and tried to push to get something in here. When Alpac first moved in, I was in the fuel business. Well, I went over because I had fought hard, and that was when Ralph Klein was thing, and I sat on the board with Ralph Klein. I was president of our association from Athabasca.
The constituency association?
The constituency. Oh, okay. I was a president of ours from Athabasca for, I think, 8 or 10 years. And then I was, I don't know, something for Fort McMurray, where you had the whole thing combined.
Oh, okay.
After. But anyhow, like I said, I fought hard for it. And then when they started building the mill, I thought, well, I got a chance, maybe we can haul fuel to them. Well, they give it all to Esso.
Oh.
So I didn't get any. So anyhow, I thought, well, you know what, it doesn't really matter that much. But so then I said, you know what, I'm going to build a service station here as close as I can to the pulp mill. So I went to the farmer that they bought all the land around there, except this one farmer that was just right on the correction line or right on the road allowance thing or just off. So I asked him if he would sell that quarter of land that was along the Alpac Road. And he said, yeah, but he said, I want the same amount of money that Alpac's paying their guys that he mm-hmm. all the ones he wanted. I said, yeah, you know what, I don't blame you.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, yeah, I'll pay you exactly what Alpac pays per acre. Eh? But I had just all muskeg land, you know, mm-hmm. but it didn't really matter anymore.
Right.
But that's, and then I built the services, and that's actually when my wife had passed away. And so that kept me going. You know what it was? It was bad because a lot of guys were coming around. I noticed I always had liquor around, you know, at mm-hmm. the thing. And there was guys coming around to my house, even in Boyle, when I lived in Boyle. And I thought, what the hell, these aren't my friends, but they're drinking my booze.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this has got to quit. So I started, there was a guy that had some construction equipment, and I let him park his equipment in my yard and at my Prosvita. And I just said, hey, for rent, can I use your grader or whatever? And I had some of my own equipment anyhow, the loader and different things. And he said, yeah, just use whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the yard, and I'd go every day when I'd finish work in Grassland, I'd go to Prosvita. And I'd work till 11, 12 o'clock at night. I'd come home, there'd be nobody around.
Right, right.
And that's how I got all the yard work done. Mm-hmm. And then I got the guy to come in and start building it, and that's how we built Prosvita. But that kept me going. That was the best thing I could
ever.
I didn't, otherwise maybe a guy would have hit the bottle or something.
Mm-hmm.
This way, you know, you were
busy.
I was kept busy, and I remember guys coming down and saying, well, why are you doing that? Well, because I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I enjoyed mm-hmm. it, and it was something different. And
mm-hmm.
So we built Prosvita up and put a restaurant into there, and it turned out to be a heck of a good business.
Okay. I've driven by it. I didn't know that was you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I built it. If you look at, there's a still sign out there saying Durko's 19th, it's a 60-year in business or something like that, or 65 years. There's a sign out right on the on the road.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I built it in, yeah. And then Rod bought it after, but so I had a good life. You know, traveled. Well, I was single, I guess you'd say, but Husky Oil used to have trips to different areas. You know, Hong Kong, Malaysia. You know, different parts of the world. Every year or every 18 months, and we were always quite successful. So I'd win a trip they'd pay half the trip or something like that. So I did travel a lot around the world, even though I can't say it was myself, because I always had so many friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not myself. Right. I always had friends, but my wife, she went on a few. When she was still here, we went on, I remember her going to China with us, and a couple other ones, but then when she got sick, well, couldn't do it. You know, our fuel business, we got to be known quite well because I hauled fuel as far as Fort Vermilion. Mm-hmm. I serviced people in Fort Vermilion, high level, any place. If somebody would say something about something going on, I'd get a hold of somebody, or a lot of times never made no money out of it, but it just was always a challenge.
Right.
So we got to be, in fact, it was quite interesting when Rod here bought Black Tiger out like in Slave Lake. And so one day Rod says to me here just a couple, 3 months ago, I had to, Colin asked me if I'd haul a skidoo to Slave Lake for him. Rod said, "Hey, stop at the malt plant. I'm just in the process of dealing with buying them all out." Mm-hmm. He said, and go in there and see what the guys think of somebody taking it over. So I did stop there, and I acted like I just heard through the grapevine that you guys are going to be getting a new owner, and you know, what do you think of him? And he's from Grassland. Just, Rod said, just feel him out, you know. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went in there. After talking to them for about 10 minutes and then or 15, the guy says to me, "Well, why are you asking what are you associated with him or what?" And I said, "No, I used to own that thing." "Oh," he said, "you're the guy that was our thorn in our side all the time." He said, "I used to go to Wabascon Hall, you know, to a lot of rigs and different things. I said, "No, you guys are a thorn in my side. If you weren't around, I would have had more business." You know, so, but after all these years, I thought that was pretty good. At least I did disturb a few people. But we did do a lot of haul, like, into Fort Chip and stuff like that.
So what do you do now?
I just help Colin. I go to Grassland not every day, but I probably go 4 or 5 times a week from Boyle. I go and meet the guys at 8 o'clock in the morning for coffee. There's a coffee group that sit, about 8 of us together, and meet with the boys go over old times or different things. I was there this morning, I leave home, and then I got to drive 20 miles to go there and back. Price of gas, I don't know if it's a good idea to keep going, but it's just...
fills your day up.
Yeah, and then I stop to see Colin at the thing, and then he gets me to pull trailers. But just small trailers now, not the big high ones or anything like that. Mostly just flat decks or that. You know, like he gets them out of Red Deer or different Edmonton, you know, Stony Plain, different places like that. Don't really do a hell of a lot.
Just enough to keep busy. And
yeah. You know what? I can't because I hurt so bad. As soon as I got a pacemaker and an defibrillator.
Oh,
and
okay.
Now they put a third wire to the bottom of my heart, and when the last time I went in, not that long ago, they said that your pacemaker's working 98% of the time. So I'm relying pretty well entirely on my pacemaker. And so I can't do anything. As soon as I start, it
you feel
hurts.
It.
Something
right.
Like that.
Right.
What the heck? But... I still enjoy driving. I like to drive around, but I don't drive stateside anymore. Well, I might this fall I might drive down to the States. But you know, over COVID, when you couldn't go any place, eh? But I don't want to fly. I definitely am. Flying is out for me. The last time I flew, it just hurt the whole time I was there.
The pressure, so. Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. So I thought, you know what, it's just not worth it, the heck. If anything, I'll just drive. You know what, I'm happy. I led a perfect life, an interesting life. I've done a lot of things. I can't really say anything that I would have done very much different. got involved in the community a lot, did a lot of community work, always supported the community 100%. It was a fireman for, the fire chief for, well, Johnny Pesek and myself started the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Eddie Smenchuk, which was a farmer there, thing. His wife taught school. She was an Elgert here from Athabasca. Anyhow, he had an old shop, and he said, well, if you guys want to move it, and you can use it for your fire hall. So we moved it about a mile down the road and moved it into Grassland and Johnny Pesek. So we would take turns being fire chief. We'd say, Johnny, it's your turn to be fire chief this year. And next was my turn. So we were, was fire chief for years. And then my brother kind of took over and done different ones. But bought our own fire truck. We bought everything. We never relied on the county at all.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go to for the casinos,
mm-hmm.
and we got to be really good friends with the lady that was kind of in charge of the casinos in McMurray. And sometimes she'd let us go 3-4 times a year.
Oh, okay.
To, on the thing, but you know what we did? We'd when I go down there, we'd bring our group. Well, we'd go to the store and buy boxes of chocolates and different things like that, you know, just to butter them up. Well, they all like that, eh?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So naturally, if a group couldn't make it, she'd phone us right away and say, well, can you guys? Well, of course we can make it, because we used to get, you know, there was times we'd get up to $60,000.
Wow.
On, for a couple days' work.
And yeah.
So that's why we were able to buy all these $400,000 or $500,000 pieces.
That first building, is that where the
fire hall is now?
Now?
Yeah, but okay. It was just over in the corner. But that's But the county built the fire hall. We didn't have to build a fire hall.
Mm-hmm.
The county built the fire hall, but all the equipment till right at the end here. I think the county paid for one truck or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the rescue vans and everything was all.
Wow.
Yeah, made just by our group of people. Johnny Pesek was really, really good in that end of it, really good, you know. But we were the envy of all the fire departments, but like I said, we made it all our own money.
Right.
And we had an inn, so it was okay, you know.
I remember when I talked to you, you had told me about going to Plamondon, I think it was. There was
Johnny Pesek.
Yeah,
with that old fire truck.
Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He'd come right to the fire. The school was on fire.
Right. And the brakes weren't working. Or
no.
Something?
Well, that was a 1949 Ford.
Mm-hmm.
That thing, you know, and it was it was an old truck. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
And the brakes just got hot, and then he had no brakes in coming down that hill. He had a runaway. He said, well, you were definitely the closest guy to the fire. That was quite hilarious then, because them fire guys, they thought, what the hell is this stupid guy doing coming right in here?
Oh, man.
But, you know, Grassland community is a good community, was a good community, still is a good little community, you know.
It's grown.
You know, at one time it was bigger than what it is now, quite a bit bigger. There were lots of little businesses, see. We had a couple of hardware stores and that, but they've all shut down. And but now it's a different style of business now. But,
yeah, it's a beautiful hall there, though. That hall
had a big
is
wedding this last weekend.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful wedding. Beautiful wedding.
Well, there had to have been, 350, 400 there for that Ukrainian supper?
Yeah.
It was packed.
Yeah. Yeah. And this wedding that they just had last weekend, a Keeler wedding, there was probably 300 or better. But they put on a real classy wedding.
Oh, nice.
They had an open bar. And they had a live band, and the band was from Kikino. And, you know, the Aboriginal or the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And they were drinking beer, and they were playing, and they, at 2:30 at night, I guess Mark Keeler said, "Hey, you guys, it's time to maybe shut it down." He said, "We're going to run out of booze because the bar was still open." And Marky was telling me when he was talking to him, he said, they said, "Hey, we'll play till 4 in the morning." He said, "You keep bringing us booze, we'll keep playing." So, yeah, they had a, it was a nice deal, very nice mm-hmm. deal. Yeah. It felt good for the, well, I think I went home about midnight, but everybody was having fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good to see people having fun like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, were you there for that Ukrainian deal?
Yeah.
They had a, yeah, they had Kravinchuk play. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good to have him too. And, you know, the guys were dancing and.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, this wedding that they had, they're called the Three Sisters. They're from Maleg, and they come to do the catering.
Oh.
And I'll bet you the youngest of the three girls is probably 80.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
One was walking with a thing like that.
Oh, wow.
And still cooking.
Oh.
And I know Mark, he said that, well, I went to the church service. And I saw Mark before the church started,
because
the church service was in Athabasca here. And he said, "I was in Grassland at 7:30 this morning," he said, "and the women were already there starting to cook."
Wow.
And they're from Maleg. Yeah. So
wow.
And they went home that night. In fact, I helped them load some of the stuff in the back of the pickup, and I thought, "You poor old gals, why are you doing this?"
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know what, you're too old for this.
Yeah.
And in fact, they said that this was a little bit too hard, too mm-hmm. far away, you know.
Yeah.
By the time they drove back home again, and they had one a Filipino girl helping, but she didn't know how to drive. She didn't,
oh.
So one of the older ladies had to drive, and she was
okay.
So tired. And
yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's no, well, they even said, they didn't realize just how much work it was going to be and everything.
Yeah.
They said they wouldn't do it again.
No. Where does Colin get his... every time I see him, he's in a colorful shirt. Where,
well, you know what? He buys... Like, I personally... That's a stupid habit of ours. I personally had over 200 shirts.
Really?
I gave over 100 away.
Wow.
Not too long ago.
Like shirts like him, those Hawaiian
not,
style?
Not quite, no.
Nope,
he,
not quite.
But he goes, he's got some outfit that he buys them from. It's forever coming on Amazon or one of them things. There's always a parcel in it. I just took his cleaners to the cleaners because they were in Vegas or Laughlin here.
Mm-hmm.
And I took his shirts to the cleaners. And what was there, 11 of them? Different colored shirts. Even the lady at the cleaners there, she said, "Oh, this guy's got very colorful shirts." I says, "Yeah, I don't know where." All of a sudden, he started doing that.
Oh.
Probably about a year or two ago, he started little by little, and now he's right into that.
Oh, wow.
But some of these that I did take to the cleaners, I even said to the cleaning lady, I said, "Wow, these are a little bit different." And she says, "Yeah, they are all different." So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, he cracks me up. Yeah.
Oh, he can talk.
Yeah.
Holy Christ.
Yeah. Very nice, though. He's very helpful. He's always been, whenever I've had a question, he's made sure I get it answered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's so like that. He's well, I know he's definitely helped me. You know, because of, you know, after my wife passed away, he just took it on himself that he'd... And he worked, like, we were very busy then.
Mm-hmm.
And he went into one of the fuel trucks and he pretty well lived in it.
Mm-hmm.
I hardly ever saw him at home. He was just driving, going steady, steady.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, both of my boys were very, very close with their mom. Very, very close. We had a good Well, you know, I knew the families really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Redmanners family, which was a very, very good family. And, yeah, they were just excellent, excellent people, you know. Too young.
Yeah.
That should never, ever happen.